Welcome to the Northeast Divide podcast. A bit of a different episode for a couple of different reasons. So, of course, it's been International Week, and we are going to be talking about Derby Day memories, basically. That's what we're going to be going into. Apologies, I've just had to have a bit of a cough there. So, you will be watching this on YouTube or listening on your device. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll notice that Anth is unable to be seen, and that is due to a technical issue that we've spent a little bit of time trying to resolve, but we're going to move on from that, and we're going to record it because we're really excited about this show. I think this is one when the podcast was kind of originally formed. I think it's one that we've had in mind for a little while, and we want to talk about kind of Derby days of past, and of course we'll have contrasting memories from the same games, I imagine, as we go on. So Anth, I'm going to let you kick off. What's the first kind of game you want to talk about in terms of one of your favourite Derby Day memories?
Oh, there's so many. So many. Anyway, like I say, it might be a blessing rather than a curse that you can't see my Macam elongated half moon face. So, you know, count your good blessings point. And all that jazz. So many memories. So many memories. I was trying to pick out the ones of Derby Day games that I've actually been in attendance rather than ones that I haven't been. And I mean, so many spring to mind, and one which really does spring to mind, even though it wasn't a very good result at the time, was in 1990, the first leg of the playoffs at Roker Park, which ended in a 0-0 draw. And Paul Hardy.
That sounds thrilling, that.
Oh, it was. Well, I thought that was game over, to be honest with you. I mean, I was like 16 years old. I remember going and you know, thinking the atmosphere was electric, and I just thought we'd blown our chance. But one of the long-lasting memories of that was Paul Hardyman stepping up to take a penalty, absolutely terrible penalty, and then trying to launch John Burridge's head through the Fulwell end and up Fulwell Road and down towards where I currently live. So, yeah, I mean, Burridge, wow, his head must have been made of titanium. But, yeah, that was the first one that's stuck in the memory. Not too sure about John Burridge's memory. God bless Budgie. So, yeah, that was one of them. And then the second leg is self-explanatory. Yeah, the second leg at St. James's Park where we won 2-0. The G-Force and Gates to Gabbiadini. The crowd were on the pitch. Didn't quite get the game called off, but it was quite sort of hair-raising at the time. I didn't go, but I remember being on me mum's top loader sunbed at the time because I was a little poser, and I remember listening to it on the radio and nearly headbutting and smashing the sunbed tubes. I was well on the way to being tangoed, and yeah, I mean, the season that followed wasn't great because obviously we went up by, you know, default as such. Swindon Town fully deserved the victory at Wembley and played us off the park, to be honest. And that season was a pretty forgettable one because we got relegated. But yeah, that's the first two. I'm sure you've got lots more you can mention as well.
Yeah, I was too young to remember the playoffs, and you know, obviously I speak to people of a different generation, and they kind of talk, well, Newcastle fans talk about it fondly. But no, it's certainly, it's a memory that I think a lot of Newcastle fans have tried to erase over the years, for obvious reasons. But I can't think. I mean, the FA Cup tie was pretty intense in terms of the atmosphere in the lead up, you know, and all that kind of thing. And I can't think of a more intense atmosphere than a Tyne Wear playoff derby. Like it just must have been absolutely, the pressure of that just must have been absolutely insane, both as a supporter and a player, I would imagine.
Oh, massively so. I mean, I think the pressure got to Paul Hardyman, and obviously when he missed that penalty. I was just reading up about his career after that, and he was on the bench for the FA Cup final against Liverpool a couple of years later. Less said about that result, the better. And then he was jettisoned off to Bristol Rovers, and that was it. But I know he made some nice comments about the club when he went to Bristol Rovers, said it wasn't the same. So he was a bit of a forgotten player, a bit of a cult hero. I mean, he was steady away as a fullback. He wasn't the greatest, but the atmosphere was just, I can't even describe it. It was quite hate-filled. It was quite intense, and it was very vocal, and it was at Roker Park, which, I mean, the Roker Raw was just all around that particular. My head was ringing, absolutely ringing. Yeah. It was fantastic, fantastic.
I can imagine. So was that your first derby that you went to, Anth, or was the one before that, or?
It was my first. How old was I? Was I 15, 16? So yeah, I'd been to games before that, but never experienced a derby as such. So yeah, a few more at Roker Park after that. I'm sure you'll mention it. The famous one.
Yeah, I mean, but then again, I suppose that was before my time a little bit, Anth. The Liam O'Brien free kick, which I assume is the one that you're referring to. But I think, so for me, the first derby I attended, I don't really want to talk about. So it was the year 2000 and Alan Shearer missed a penalty. And you won 2-1. Because I think you won two games 2-1 in a row, didn't you, St. James's Park? There was the one in the rain under Hullett when, Hullett then got sacked afterwards. And then there was this one under Bobby Robson, where Shearer missed the penalty, and I think he was surprised. Now, and I think this is why I think bits of the rivalry kind of get stoked up about this, about kind of the obsession. You know, there's the talk about the obsession between Newcastle being obsessed with Sunderland or vice versa. Mm-hmm. There was a picture in the Stadium of Light of Sorensen saving that penalty from Shearer. Like, I can't get my head around that. Like who looks at that and goes, you know,
way,
because it's a big moment to win a game, but like for me, I don't think we've got an equivalent picture of that. We've got pictures of you know, lots of Newcastle fans in the stand under the stadium, like that'll be up somewhere in the training ground, but like that for me, I found odd. But that was the first derby I went to. But I think the ones that stick in the mind, so what the first one I'm going to talk about, I wasn't at, but I think it was a memorable game for a lot of different reasons. So the first one I want to talk about was in 2006 at the Stadium of Light. Sunderland were chasing a very unwanted record of the most games lost in a row or something like that, or the least points accrued in the Premier League. Maybe both of those, I can't remember. But Sunderland went 1-0 up in that game. Can't remember who scored for you, actually, off the top of my head. You might vaguely remember it. But, you know, you had Steve Caldwell playing in your back four that day for you. And we ended up winning 4-1. Michael Chopra came off the bench to score almost instantly and then celebrate in front of the South Stand, I think. And then within 2 or 3 minutes, there's a penalty given. Shearer takes it and scores, kind of undoes. And he talks about that. He says there was a lot of anger in that penalty because obviously he'd missed one. He remembered the one that he'd missed a few years earlier against Sunderland to make it 2-1. And then after that, Newcastle ran away with the game. There's a song that we sing, which is 1-0 down, 4-1 up. Albert Luque wrapped it up. And it's the only song I think that Albert Luque ever had for Newcastle because he was very unmemorable after that. But that was a game when it was a poor Newcastle side against an extremely poor Sunderland side. And I think, you know, a couple of moments go the other way and maybe Sunderland hang on and get a very famous victory that day. But I think as soon as the equaliser went in, that was it. The heads went down on the red and white side and Newcastle pushed on, got the result. It was Alan Shearer's last game in a Newcastle shirt. And this is another point of pride for some Sunderland fans. You know, around the fact, oh, well, you know, we're ending his career. Well, he was mm-hmm. retiring in like 8 games time anyway. So, I mean, take as much of that as you want. I mean, that one stuck in the memory. So the reason that stuck in the memory is I remember I suppose the adult version of watching that on Teletext, I was watching it on Betfair because I'd had a bet on I had a bet on it, and I was watching the odds change whilst we were listening to it on the radio because we struggled to get a stream for it because we couldn't get a ticket because we end at Sunderland, so you know you're looking at 150 loyalty points or whatever probably at that time. But that one stuck in the memory for me. I mean, what do you remember from that day, Anthony, or have you tried to kind of remove that from memory?
There's lots of things I've tried to forget about that day. I mean, John Stead up front. Caldwell, like you say, his defensive lapse. I mean, Shopper was on the pitch for, what, 15, 20 seconds when he scored that goal?
Literally, so, there's a shot of him running off the bench from the subs bench.
I've seen it.
And running across the pitch. And it tracks him and then he scores. Yeah.
What lives long in the memory was I wasn't at the match because I couldn't get a ticket. But I remember there was a pub on the cusp, but well, it was in Southwick next to Thompson Park called the Drain Horses. And they were like, we're going to have the match on there. We'll stream it. Everyone get there. So everyone got there. Everyone was waiting. There was a lot of faces, as in Sunderland supporters who were a bit lively, who couldn't go at the match for whatever reason. And we were like, what's happening with the match? What's going on? Then some bloke would come in with dirty fingers and go, we're working on it. We're working on the signal. The match never came on. So we went to the Flying Boat on Sea Road, which was one of me local haunts, no match on there. Someone had a radio at the time. Honestly, it was back in the day, wasn't it? One of the long-lasting memories of that match was the text messages exchanged between me and my best mate. And I must admit, when Hoyt's goal went in for ourselves, Justin Hoyt, who was on loan for ourselves at the time.
From Arsenal, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, from Arsenal. He was great on loan for us, actually. When the goal went in, I just remember bombarding my best mate, God love him, with some horrendous text messages. Absolutely horrific. And then in the second half, I got me just desserts because I got them more so. And you know what? To this day, we still talk about that. Can you remember when you sent us this message? Come on. Yeah. So that lived long in the memory with regards to the hate that came in text message form from my beloved friend. Yes.
Well, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes you've got to wait before you start celebrating, I suppose. I suppose that's the trick there. What's the next game you want to talk about, Anth?
Oh, do you know what? The first derby game that I took my son to and my wife's first ever football match. Now, my wife is from Amble. She's got no football and allegiances. Amble's one of those places, again, I think there's more Newcastle, but again, there's a few Sunderland up there whenever I've gone up. And we, very, very interesting. So we went, it was the match in October of 2013. We beat me as previously at St. James Park in April, the 3-0 result, and I'm sure we'll get onto that as well for a certain manager's reaction to a goal.
I know,
traumatized. We went, like I say, I took my son to numerous games before that, but his first ever derby game, and I remember Fletcher's goal going in, and obviously it was dreamland. I thought, you know, The result that we had in April was like, wow, that was out of the blue, to be perfectly honest with you. But what a game, and the goals were fantastic. And then obviously he's got the equaliser. I had to Google this. Debuchy got the equaliser?
Matthew
Debuchy. So he got the equaliser, and I thought this is going to just be a draw, you know, it'll play out in a draw. And then Barini, honestly, the goal went in, the celebration. We were in the Premier Concourse at the time.
Yes, that's like the equivalent level 7. That's above, is that not above the Black Cats bar in the Newcastle stand?
Yeah, the highest up. I think we were nigh on in the back row, and we were to the left-hand corner, and we were right next to the away support. Now, the goal went in. I went up like a rocket. I was hugging everyone around us. I think I nearly went over the seats at the time. And I remember turning around to my son, and she was my girlfriend at the time, and they were giving it big licks and sticking the V's up at the Newcastle United supporters. And I was like, hold on a second, it's me who's the passionate one. You've got my son even at the big V's and you're not even into football. So that stuck in the memory. I mean, that was, the atmosphere there again was electric, absolutely electric. Fantastic. I mean,
it's interesting that, isn't it? Because in terms of affinity, like, and family affinity, I suppose, like, it's amazing how someone can be drawn in by your passion, and how kind of they can be passionate about things for you. So, and this isn't Derby Day memories, but I suppose just to give you an example, when I went to the cup final last year, I always mentioned the wife, if I'm going to a match, I'm always like, oh, by the way, it'll be on this channel, like, knowing that she's not going to watch it. It's just like an on-running joke. But she made a point when we went to the cup final of sitting down with the kids and having them watch the game and made sure they were in their colours and took photos,
nice.
And all of that.
Man.
Yeah, and she watched the game, and you know, she was talking to us after it and saying, "Oh, there was this that happened," you know, and she's not bothered by it at all normally. So it was, it's the see the love that you've got for it, and they want to love that for you and be supportive in that way. And the fact that, like, you know, Lisa's doing that just shows, doesn't it, that she saw how much it meant to you, and she wanted to kind of be part of that. So it's a lovely thing. I mean, it wasn't a lovely thing for me as a fan. absolutely not. Because that was the second time in a row that you'd beaten me. We don't need to talk about the other four. But it was the thing at that time, and we might come on to this later as well, is that it was a time when probably on paper we had a stronger side than yourselves. But actually, when it came to the game, we just weren't up for the occasion, and we didn't want it enough, which is pretty criminal, really. And for that to happen in so many games, and I think there's only one game in that pattern of fixtures, that six in a row, which gets referred to on a regular basis, really where I feel like we lost the game trying to win it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think, again, it was just we didn't have the character on that day for me. And I knew when Barini's goal went in, that was it. You know, there was no chance from there. Mm-hmm. So it was a pain in the arse. Moving on, though, I'll talk about a brighter memory. So I want to talk about the first game that I attended at the Stadium of Light. The first derby I attended at the Stadium of Light, and the only derby I've attended at the Stadium of Light. Now, I was in the home end. So I had to behave myself, which of course I did very well. So my dad knew somebody who had a ticket and said, "Oh, do you want to go to the game?" And I literally, like, I didn't say yes straight away because I was thinking, do I really? There's one thing going. So I've been at the Stadium of Light before, and we'd had a ticket from a friend before to watch my dad. Now, my dad grew up a Man United fan. We had tickets in the home end for Sunderland against Man United. And that was the year Tor Andre Flo had signed for you. So I think he scored Giggs scored the first goal and Flo equalised for you. And you drew one each. So that was the first game I'd went to, but you know, was quite happy to, you know, applaud if you scored and all that kind of thing and make sure I didn't get beaten up and whatever. But the idea of going for a derby where you really care about the result, you can't be kind of sit in the middle and just kind of, you know, clap along or what have you. You kind of just have to react how everyone else does around you. So I was like, right, okay, I'm going to do this. Now, this was in, I think it was August 2011, I think. In fact, it might have been a little bit later. No, it was August 2011. So basically, it was well known for Ryan Taylor over the wall. So the Newcastle fans was when they were still based in the South Stand, at like ground level behind the goal. I'm sat there probably we were facing on, so we were in like the main stand where the tunnel is, essentially. I'm not sure what the name of the stand is. I haven't studied the stadium like that well. But we had pretty good seats, we'll say. So before that, there'd been an incident where there was a very strong appeal for handball on the line from a Sunderland player, and it absolutely essentially the Sunderland player punched the ball off the line, if you see the replay back. So already I'm sat there thinking, God, you know, if we're not going to get a decision like that, then we've got no chance here. Free kick happens, and sails in. I sit on my hands and I just say, bloody hell. Because you've got to do something. You've got to react somehow, right? You've got to say something. You can't just sit there and say nothing. I can't cheer because I'll get beaten up, potentially. Because it's, you know, it's hatred, isn't it? So I sit there for the rest of the game just trying to like kind of manage the situation and manage to get through it. But that was an experience, to say the least. And I'm glad I went. I'm glad I watched it. But God, I'm not sure if I'd do it again. I'm not sure if I'd do it again. And at half time, man, the thing that really struck me more than anything else And I think this is a bit of an issue with, and this is not all your fan base, right? And I think it's really unfair that things get tarnished at fan bases generally because they hear an anecdote and they think, oh, well, that's just the mentality of the entire fan base. Unfortunately, you have idiots in a fan base or you have people who are too focused on one area. But I was sat there and there were people talking about, oh, it's all right, we'll finish above them because that's Yota, he'll get sold, and then, you know, they'll lose Joey Barton, or, you know, they'll get injuries and all of this. And I'm sat there thinking, like, you've got players as well, you know, like you've got players to get behind. And actually, we're talking about on paper about the squads. Like you'd been in the Premier League a couple of years by then. So I think you'd been in the Premier League 5 years, 4 years or something. We'd just come back up a season and a half before. Your squad was probably ahead of ours. I think you had Asamoah Gyan playing up front for you at the time, possibly Darren Bent still. Yeah. I don't think he'd moved on just yet. So like you didn't have Muggs playing for you at the time.
Do you know what? I mean, everyone gets hit up before a derby match. Everyone gets hit up at a derby match, post-derby match. You pick over the bones, whatever the result. But I know that, I think we were discussing it before this podcast with regards to some sets of supporters from, I suppose, from both sides are quite happy that if you get a victory or two victories over your arch enemy or nemesis that season and stay up, well, that's enough. That's not enough. You know, you want to aim for the best position you can in the league table. Maybe it's a good cup run. You know, you don't want to be just aiming for that. Obviously it's high on the list when you start the season. What's the first sort of, you know, the fixtures you look out for when you're in the Premiership together? It's obviously the derby games, isn't it? So not them ones down in Cornwall or whatever they're called, the borough, but the real derby game. So, you know, one of them ones, isn't it? So that's the first ones I look out for. And do you know what? I miss it. I really miss it. I really do. And I hope that however long it may take, that we'll see those days again sooner rather than later, because it's you kind of, I mean, just the build up to the FA Cup game, the banter and everything, you just kind of put a price on it. It's amazing.
It is. I think it's interesting, this whole concept of how much do you care about your rivals. So I remember at the time, the end of the 10-11 season, and the Sunderland fan that I worked with came over and he had this Newcastle mug in this hand and the Sunderland mug in this hand, and he kind of like put the Sunderland mug on top of the Newcastle mug. He was like, "You all right?" And I'm like, I'm looking at him going,
"What on earth?"
Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine, mate. I'm fine." And he's like, "Oh, do you notice how like this is higher than this one?" And I'm like, and I said to him, I said, "I don't give a shit. If we finish three places below you in the Premier League, I couldn't care." So that, like we've just been promoted. I'm glad that we're safely, you know, in mid-table, to be fair. Like, that's all. That's what I was expecting from this season, or wanted, is like a minimum requirement. I couldn't give a shit if we finish above yous or not. Like, I don't care. But I did then reference the fact that we'd obviously beaten them 5-1 that year.
Oh, dear me.
And that's going to be the next game we'll talk about, Anth.
No. Right, I'm off. Yeah. See you later. Thanks, John. All the best.
But I'll give you a chance to reply before that. But this whole idea, I didn't care. Like, I've never cared about where we finish in relation to Sunderland. What I've cared about is whether we stay in the Premier League. Like, if we, like, put it this way, right? And I think this is the issue, Anth, I think, isn't it, really? Like, it's a really sad indictment that there will be some fans that will look back in 10, 20 years, potentially, and say, you know that period of time when we beat Newcastle 6 times in a row and we, like, stayed in the Premier League, like, consistently, like, that was probably the highlight for us. And, like, I think that's really sad. If that's how anyone views success.
I agree. Do you know what? Again, back to the banter, everyone. I mean, that, no disrespect to your workmate or previous workmate, whatever, but, you know, everyone has their version of banter. Some of it can be quite lame. Some of it can be quite funny. Some of it can be absolutely hilarious. But I'm the same when it comes to that. I mean, yeah, I want to win a game against our biggest rivals, but again, it doesn't define your season. It really doesn't. If you're in the Premiership, you should be aiming for, you know, the highest league table position. If you can get there or thereabouts towards a European qualification, we can only dream of such things at this particular moment in time, my lot. But, you know, who knows what may happen in the future. You just, you know, I've got a lot of friends from Newcastle. I worked in Newcastle for 1 year. I lived in Heaton for 8 years, 8.5, 9 years, whatever. And I loved living there. And the banter, I mean, I watched one of our biggest victories in the Chillingham Arms pub just off Chilly Road with my best
love
mate.
Love the Chilly.
Oh,
the Chilly.
Brilliant, great man. Pub. Brilliant. Let's just say the atmosphere after the match was not the greatest. I was quite happy skipping along to me then girlfriends at the time, me now wife, because I don't think we didn't live together at the time. So, yeah. But no, I just think have your banter. I've, you know, it's all fine and well, but as you say, people who think that is the be all and end all, I just think maybe you need to reevaluate things a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely. Do you have another game you want to talk about, Anth?
I do. Yes. Again, it's another one that I went to. I mean, there's the 3-0 result when I think Colaccini was very unlucky to be sent off. And he was playing very well up until that point. And then you obviously had to change everything around. The dynamics changed. I think the result flattered us. I mean, Fletcher's goal was a highlight. What a finish that was. But that was a good game. But the one that sticks in the memory again was when I went to my son to all three of those latest home wins anyway. But apart from the FA Cup game, didn't go to that. And obviously we didn't win. But Defoe's wonder goal and just his reaction at the end of it, the emotion. And I mean, that lad scored a hell of a lot of goals for some good clubs and some absolutely fantastic goals. And what he said after the match stuck in the memory as well, saying that, you know, I felt emotional, the atmosphere, the occasion and everything. And I thought for him, a big game player who's played in a lot of big matches for big clubs, for him to say that and just the goal itself, I mean, oh my, where we were sat, the sun was shining and I was like, has that gone in? And then everyone went up. The roar was deafening. It was on a par with what I experienced at Roker Park. But another thing that lives in the memory, your goalkeeper, apparently.
Yeah, I was about to talk about this.
Yeah, I'll let you. I found that. I mean, he got a lot of hate after that, didn't he? A lot of hate.
Well,
a lot of backlash,
I think Tim Krul generally Krul, yeah, is really well thought of, I think, mm-hmm, from Newcastle fan base. He got some stick that day.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and if anyone's not aware of the incident we're talking about, at half, the goal came just before half time. Defoe was like wonder strike. And it was like, it's a goal that's worthy of winning any game. And that was another poor derby showing from us, really. You see what we mean about the camera? We almost had him. And it's a real shame. I've got you, Anth, now. We've got you.
Oh, I'm off. There you go.
Oh. So, anyway, wonder strike goes in. And at half-time, Tim Krul, pretty much fist pumps. Defoe, as if to say, like, that's a great strike. Now, there was a section of the Newcastle fan base that weren't very happy with this because, you know, well, how can you, in that moment, you should be focused on trying to beat them, what you're doing, like, you know, acknowledging how well they've done and all this kind of thing. Like, for me, it was water off a duck's back. Like these guys are the professional footballers, like they are. And yes, they want to win the game. And yes, they should be drilled. And yes, they should be focused and whatever else. But all he's done is he's just acknowledged another professional for an amazing strike and a fantastic piece of work. That's kind of how I saw it. But there was some stick. But I don't think it's not one of these things where he now can't enter the region because he once fist pumped a goalkeeper. A striker who plays for Sunderland. Like, and you know, it's odd, isn't it? Like, I think, you know, Barini, who's so well thought of by Sunderland, was filmed on his way to the derby. I don't know if you saw this on social media, Anthony, if we've talked about it before, but the crossing, he's driving over the Tyne Bridge and his missus is like, oh, it's so good to be back here. and like driving into Newcastle. And obviously they're up for the FA Cup derby at the time. Yeah. So, you know, like it, people can take these things different ways. But you know, it's war if it ducks back. It, you know, it is what it is. So I'm going to talk about the game on Halloween in 2010. So this was the first derby after Newcastle had been promoted. Sunderland, of course, had stayed up the year that we went down. Fairly tight, if I remember rightly. I think, you know, it could have, I think they finished like 16th, possibly, when we'd gone down in 2009. So it was quite a big deal. And I think it was, you know, and it was probably the first time in my memory following the club that Sunderland would have probably been favourites that day. And I think you looked across the 11 as a whole, and you probably say, and I know we've said it, I've said it a couple of times. I've said, oh, well, you know, Sunderland probably, you know, had a better side than Newcastle. But I think on that one, it really was. And I think, you know, just as a look, we had Andy Carroll playing up top for us. Now, Andy Carroll, a fantastic player. But at that stage, he was an incredibly new player for us. You know, he played in the he played in the Championship for us and done well, but he was given the number 9 shirt in the summer, and it was a big chance for him to kind of prove what he was made of. So Newcastle's side that day, I'll just go through it. So Tim Krul in goal, Simon Mignolet was playing for Sunderland. Okay, I think we've got the central defender battle because Colaccini played, as did Titus Bramble. But Michael Turner was your other centre-half against Mike Williamson, so I think you'd probably say, you know, you edged that. Phil Bardsley, I never rated him as a player. I think Danny Simpson's probably a better player there, fair enough. And then if we go into the midfield, you had Catamol, we obviously had Cech Tiote, Jordan Henderson played for you that day, as did Steve Malbronk, Danny Welbeck. You played El Mohammadi and Darren Benton. Asamoah Gyan came off the bench for you that day as well.
We had a good bench that day as well.
Yeah, your bench decent. That day. Yeah. So the substitutes that came on were Mensah, Richardson and Gyan. And unused substitutes, you had Anton Ferdinand, you had Zenden, Paulo Da Silva and Craig Gordon, who couldn't get in your side. Now, Craig Gordon at the time, that's not a bad reserve goalkeeper to have at that time. You know, we had on our bench, we had Ole Soderberg, was our reserve goalkeeper that day. We didn't even have Steve Harper fit at the time. We made one substitution, which was Niall Ranger coming on for Shola Ramiobi.
Oh, wow.
And I think what really kind of sticks with me in the memory is that once the first goal went in and the roar was there, I just felt like we wanted it more that day. Like that was the, and this is becoming a common theme of the memories that we've talked about. But that day, we just, everything went right. Everything went right for us. We got the goals at the right times. If you said to me someone was going to score a hat trick that day, I never would have thought it would be Kevin Nolan. You know, the players that were on that field. And then obviously Amiobi got two as well. And I think that's probably the game where people started to look at his record and go, actually, he's got a really good record against Sunderland. And that's where the whole Macam Slayer kind of nickname came from him. But yeah, I mean, it was quite unbelievable at that point. And I think it's probably, in a lot of ways, one of my favourite derby victories because of what it meant at the time. And kind of, I suppose, my expectations going into it were really low.
I remember that match. I remember it very well. I remember being in a city centre pub in Sunderland. Well, oversized town centre, but we'll not get into that either. So, yeah, anyway, we're getting there eventually. But I remember going with my good friend Ian from university, who is a massive Newcastle United supporter, Geordie through and through, good banter, always before derby games, text messages, back and forth. Same again for the FA Cup game this year. Good banter as always. Lovely lad, top of lad. And He watched it with us in a city centre pub, and he had to, a bit like yourself, at the stadium light, just have some sort of reaction, but not too much as such, as in, oh, nah, never mind. Not. It got to the point where when Nolan got his third goal and his hat-trick and the celebration, which, again, just pops up with my nightmares every now and again, it went toxic and the atmosphere was really bad, where there was actually Sunderland supporters fighting themselves. And it got to a point where I was like, you know, yeah, we're getting beat. We deserve to be getting beat. You've got to resign yourself to defeat. And, you know, drink your beer, dust yourself down, get yourself form. You know, maybe he's have a bit cry about it. Maybe he's stew about it. Maybe he's Monday and not be in a good mood. But some of the supporters took a little bit too far. And when they were fighting amongst each other, I thought, you know what, this is a nasty side of Derby Day. But you've played very well. And like you said, you've wanted it more. And we talked about that, didn't we, earlier? You mentioned it. Sometimes you can have the quality in your squad, but sometimes you need that effort to go with it as well. Because the quality can get you so far down the line, but if you're not going to put the effort in to go with that quality, and you've just had more than us on the day, and I think Bent got one in the 91st minute. And I mean, I just thought, well, that doesn't even soften the blow, because it was a sound wallop on that day. It really was.
Yeah. Now, the reason Darren Bent scored is because, of course, that then meant that Newcastle fans could tease Sunderland fans by replacing the S with a 5 and the L with a 1 in Sunderland. Yeah. So you would have had months of that, no doubt. Ant's being sent
that
here.
Imagery, again, just in my eyes, just burned my eyes. Yes, it did.
I can imagine. I'm really annoyingly going to end up finishing this podcast on a Sunderland win. And it really irritates me that I've managed to do that as the person who runs the podcast, who makes sure it goes out, who makes sure that we get it. The planning's horrendous to the point where I've managed to basically, you know, shaft the black and white side of the Northeast divide. So the last game we're going to talk about, it sits in my memory, and it sits in my memory for a couple of reasons. So I think this is one where we go into that game and Newcastle should probably be favourites for the game. If I look at kind of the two 11s, I mean this is at a time, you know, we're playing Krull, Debussy, Stephen Taylor, Yanga and Biwa, Gutierrez, Tiote Akabai, Marvo, Sissoko, Gouffran, Cisse. You know, we had Ben Arthur on the bench. We had Shola Amiobi, who was seen at that point as a Sunderland specialist, on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, aside from that, we had like Perch, Hydara, Anita Campbell on the bench. I mean, you know, I'm not saying we had a plethora of superstars there. But, you know, you think that 11, you know, should do all right against Sunderland. Mm-hmm. You that day had Mignolet, Bardsley, Rose, Quayle, mm-hmm. O'Shea, Johnson, McLean, Ndai, Larson, Sessegnon, and Graham. Mm-hmm. So I'm going into that game thinking, yeah, like we should do decent here. And from the point that Sessegnon put your head, we weren't in the game at all. And it was, you talk about toxic atmosphere, this is the infamous horse fighting game. Which, you know, is an embarrassing moment for any club, but certainly for us. My seat at the time, I was sat, I used to sit in the Millburn Paddock as a season ticket holder at Newcastle. So I'd been there since about 2001. Yeah, 2001. I'd been there since. And there's a couple of moments there. Adam Johnson scores the second. And at that point, that's when, we're not saying anymore on Adam Johnson. At that point, Paolo Di Canio knee slides pretty much in my eye line across the touchline. The Sunderland fans obviously going mad at that point. We know the game's probably over. Now, obviously, we had substitutes warming up in front of us throughout the game, and they were getting stick as the woods. you know, any away substitutes get stick anyway, just, you know, a bit of banter or whatever. But of course, Sunderland, they're going to get a bit more. And one of those substitutes was Vaughan, David Vaughan. And David Vaughan scores a beauty of a third goal in the Leasers end. And you'll notice he comes over to where I used to sit, pretty much, to celebrate, and, you know, hands over ears kind of celebration, if I remember rightly. And that was a real low moment in the derby. But that was, I think that was the result that kicked off the bad form that Newcastle had in that. Now, before that, I had a very memorable moment. You see, I'm going to try and turn this around now and finish on a positive for Newcastle. And a very positive memory of we beat you 2-0 the second year that you had your record lowest Premier League points. And Shearer scored, and he came over to basically where we were and celebrated there. So that's one that'll live in the memory. But I think the importance of the FA Cup game, and this is how I'm going to wrap it up. The importance of the FA Cup game in January, when that draw was made in the December, and kind of looking at kind of what could happen and how pivotal that was in our season from an FA Cup point of view. But actually, in terms of the derby, it was really important for Newcastle to kind of almost try and restamp their authority on that game, because we'd had years and years of poor form in that game. The game on, I think it was the 28th of December, when again Johnson scored in the last minute, when Newcastle were going trying to win the game. We'd had the 3-0 that you talked about earlier, where Newcastle were the better team until Colaccini got sent off and then had to change. And you know, we should have won that day as well. You just look at these different things, and it was almost like a jinx that hung over us. So I think we're lucky that we've had that opportunity, kind of almost in our mind, put it right, I suppose, and move forward. And now that's ancient history for us. And but I've really enjoyed talking about these games, and you know, really kind of reminiscing some good times for our clubs and some bad times for our clubs, no doubt. And you're right, it would be really good at some point to see to see us play those games again on a regular basis. Don't think it's going to be next season. I think we're both quite realistic about that.
Oh, yes.
Newcastle aren't getting relegated. Neither are Sunderland, but Sunderland won't be going up, I don't think, either. Maybe a ladies' derby next year, but that depends whether Sunderland get promoted or not, because they're currently leading the championship there at the moment. And then we do get the occasional ones at the under levels, but there's nothing like that men's senior game. And the atmosphere, as you say, the lead up to the FA Cup game in January, it was something. I think I'd missed it, and I didn't realise I'd missed it. I think I used to dread the Derby Day, certainly when we were going through that horrendous run that we went through. I used to absolutely dread it, but I think January showed me actually there's still something in this, there's still some magic in there. And it'll be good to have those memories back and not rely on cup draws for it. But we will leave it there. And thank you so much for coming on today. Newcastle play West Ham this weekend. And so that will be no doubt the focus on kind of next week's pod, about how we're gonna kind of move on from our poor form and where that's been, and try and sort that out. But it's a big Easter weekend for Sunderland. They play Cardiff away on Good Friday, and then on Easter Monday they host Blackburn at Stadium of Light as well. So we're going to have plenty to talk about next week. Hopefully you'll be able to see Anth next week, but you'll certainly hear from him one way or another. He's been Anth, I've been John. This is the Northeast Divide. Thank you very much, and goodbye.